Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought Bite-Sized RSE, sponsored by the Universe HPC program. Anyone who works in research knows that a lot of the time you do this. That's right, writing. And more specifically, writing articles for scientific journals. Maybe not so much with a typewriter today, but whatever you use, a lot of your scientific career depends on writing scientific articles. Publishing your work makes it available to your peers in the field and share your knowledge with others. As such, it is an important vehicle for getting your work recognized. And this recognition in return is not only important for your team and yourself, but also determines, at least in parts, how and if your research, your team, and the institute you work for get funded in future. And one way to measure this recognition and the importance of your work is how many times your work is being quoted or cited by others. Which brings me to the subject of this bite-sized RSE episode, citations. But more specifically, software citations, and software citations using the citation file format. And for this, I invited Jason Marsen from the East Science Center in the Netherlands, who, together with members from the German Aerospace Agency, the DLR, are working to develop and promote the use of the citation file format, or CFF for short. But before we do that, let's dive a bit into the background of it all. The beginnings of scientific publishing go back a long time, to the 17th century in fact. One of the first scientific journals, in a modern sense, were a French journal, Journal des Savants, and the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society, which followed shortly after. At this stage, the journals were effectively a collection of letters that gentlemen scientists, and in those days they were almost exclusively men, were sending each other to discuss experiments or other matters regarding science and research. Well, collecting a few letters may sound very simple, but what it did bring to the table was a systematic way of storing, distributing and managing these communications. An important step in scientific communication indeed. Fast forward to the mid of the 20th century, when scientific publishing has turned into a formidable and, dare I say it, highly profitable industry. And as I said at the beginning, publishing in journals makes and breaks careers in research. And this is largely driven by what is known as the impact factor. The impact factor of journals was created by one Eugene Garfield from Penn State University in the US, and an important part in calculating this impact factor is, you guessed it, the number of citations of a published paper. And this on the simple and yet not unreasonable basis that if more and more researchers quote your paper, then, well, it must be more important. Which is all well and good. But what does that have to do with software? And why should we cite software, and how would we go about it? This has its roots in the revolution that started in the latter part of the 20th century, the huge and fast advancement in computing. To the extent that, as of now, hardly any research is possible without the use of some software tool or another, be that to crunch numbers, analyze data, or visualize results. Sometimes software can be very simple, say a shell script. Sometimes it can be an off-the-shelf software product, like a spreadsheet. But more often than not, software in research means writing complex code and algorithms, resulting in at times huge software packages, applications and libraries. In short, researchers, perhaps like yourself, spend more and more time on developing and maintaining software, and some of us indeed even have jobs where we do this full time. Enter research software engineers. Software matters. A lot. And yet, software gets often sidelined in research articles. But given the importance that published articles have in the scientific world, impact factors and all, would it not make sense to include software in the list of references so that it can be cited by others? And that is precisely the question that many have asked for some time. Robert Wilson, for example, an SSI fellow, encouraged the use of software citation as early as 2013. And in 2016, a report came out from a Force 11 workgroup, edited by Arfon Smith, Dan Katz and Kylie Niemeyer, setting out principles for software citations. And in that report, they highlighted six principles, from the importance to recognize software as a valid and citable research output, to specifying what the software is, its version, and other essential metadata. You will find a link to the paper in the episode notes. Writing down those principles was an important step, because if you want to cite software, it will need to be slightly different to citing a published paper, say, which is something that Jason will explain a little bit later. Writing down what we need to make software citable was one thing, of course. Another was to turn this into a practical solution. And this started at a workshop run by the Software Sustainability Institute in the UK in September 2017. The title of the discussion group was Development and Implementation of a Standard Format for Citation Files, and its output led directly to the creation of what we now have as a citation file format, CFF. Amongst the participants of the workshop were a number of names you might recognize, but for sure you recognize Stefan Druskert from the German Aerospace Agency, who with others developed and promoted the citation file format energetically ever since. The file format itself is based on the popular YAML file format, and Jason will explain a little bit later what it contains. A breakthrough came when it was officially supported by GitHub, and indeed you will find documentation about CFF on the GitHub documentation site, including an example of what it looks like. The short and sweet is, you can create a CFF file and store it in the root directory of your repository on GitHub. The citation file format project itself also sits in a GitHub repository where you can find all the additional tools to create and manage your citation files, the most important of which is probably the CFF init tool, which is a site to help you create a CFF file in the first place. Once you have a CFF file, you can then convert it into different citation formats. But not only that, having it in your repo opens the doors to other online services and publishing platforms, which is indeed what Jason and I have been talking about in the following conversation about CFF. So without further ado, here's Jason.
I'm Jason Maassen. I'm from the Netherlands eScience Center. I'm one of the technology leads there, and I'm very much involved in all kinds of effort related to research software development, quality, citation, etc., etc.
Why is it important that we worry about software citation in the first place, from your point of view?
Well, what you see nowadays is that research software is sort of an integral part of research, right? So software is one of the most important tools that we have nowadays to do simulations, to do data analysis, etc., etc. If you look at research, it has been custom for a long time to actually cite the work that you base your research on. Initially, just publications. Later, also data sets were being cited. But of course, it's also very important to cite the software, because without the software, you can have data, but there's no way in which you can figure out as a reader how this data was transformed into the research results. So software is really an integral part of research, of open science also, and being able to find this software and reproduce the results is just a very important aspect.
So the software citation file format is a specific solution. So how did that come about?
Well, the citation file format was actually the result of a workshop which was held in 2017, if I'm correct, the WISPI workshop. And at the time, it became clear that, well, software citation was important as part of the whole research process and recording research outputs, but that citing software was actually harder than citing just regular publications. So if you have a journal paper, for example, it tends to be stable, right? At some point, it's published by some publisher, it gets a DOI, it has a set of authors, and it's easy to publish because it doesn't change. But of course, software isn't like that. It does change. It has multiple versions over time. For each version, a different set of authors could be involved in developing the software. So it became clear that citing software was actually much harder. And this means that if people want to cite software in publications, they don't really know how to do this. And to sort of help them out, the citation file format was created, envisioned, that allows software developers to sort of specify the relevant metadata for citation of their software for each and every version. And that way help users of the software figure out how to cite it properly in their publications.
And it's the metadata that I'm interested in. What actually goes into a citation file format? What are the really important bits that need to go in there?
Well, if you look at what's in a citation file format file, it is a YAML file, right? So that's just a specific type of format. And the nice thing of this format is that it's machine readable. Computers can use it to do all kinds of stuff, but it's also human readable. It's quite friendly for humans to actually edit and read these files. And if you look at what goes into these files, there's all kinds of information related to the software. So simple things like what is the name of your software, an abstract, what does it actually do, who are the authors, the names, their ORCIDs, etc. But what's different is that it also has information about the version of the software and the date that this version was released and the location where you can actually find the software in a repository, for example, the license the software has. And this is typically very different from the citation information you would typically use for a publication.
What you already alluded to earlier was that software moves on. It goes into different versions. And when you publish a paper, say you do some research on microscopy or whatever it is, and at this stage you're using a particular version of a software, and the software itself may also use some particular versions of libraries and additional tools that it uses. Does that go into the citation format as well?
That typically doesn't go into the citation file format. It is indeed very much a problem that your software depends on all kinds of dependencies or libraries, and to be able to reproduce the results of research with a particular version of the software, you also need to have the particular versions of the libraries that were used. Otherwise, the outcome may be different. So indeed, that is a problem, but that's more related to the what they call the Software Bill of Materials, so the SBOM for short, which is really sort of a list of all the dependencies and the dependencies of the dependencies, etc., that go into creating a particular version of the software. And the Software Bill of Materials actually comes from the cybersecurity field, where it's very important to have these things in order to be able to detect security issues in libraries. So what you see in applications and web services, for example, is that these Software Bill of Materials is seen as an important way to track potential security issues. But you could also track it to, or use it to actually track the use of dependencies and actually give credit to those dependencies in a certain sense.
So the citation file format, it's a YAML file, it's a text readable, it's a normal human readable file as well as machine readable. So how do people create a citation file and where do they put it?
So there's multiple ways in which you can create a citation file, CFF file, I should say. The obvious way to do it is just with your text editor, right? If you have a text editor, you could edit it by hand, but this is a bit error prone because you need to get the layout correct. So there's also a CFF init web tool that you can use, which actually supports you in this, and essentially a web form that asks you for all of the relevant information that goes into the CFF file and then creates the CFF file for you. And once you've created this, you can download the resulting CFF file. And what you would typically do is you would put this CFF file in your source code repository, so GitHub or GitLab, for example. And the nice thing about putting it there is that you can keep it in sync with the versions of your software. So whenever you do a new release of your software, the CFF file should be in this release with all of the relevant citation information for that version. But also, the CFF file is actually recognized by GitHub itself. And if it sees one of these CFF files in your repository, it will provide citation information on your GitHub page. So people can actually download the citation information from your GitHub page in various formats like BibTeX, for example. GitHub isn't the only one that actually supports CFF. So also Zenodo, which is the place where you can archive all kinds of research outputs, including software. Zenodo also supports CFF and actually uses the metadata to properly put the metadata with the archived copy of your software. And similarly, you have reference managers like Zotero, for example, that also support it. So there's actually a whole ecosystem of tools that allow you to use this citation information in various ways.
So let's say that we created a CFF file using CFF in it, but then I have to manually update it each time I get a new version that I want to use in the publication. Or how does that work? Does it automatically update, or how is it keeping in sync with what's happening in the source code and the versioning?
That's actually a very good question. The latest version of CFF in it also allows you to cut and paste existing CFF files, update them also in web form. And I think the outcome of the Hermes project also allows you to do this more automatically. But to be honest, I'm not 100% sure about that. So you would have to talk to the people involved in that project for the exact details. But indeed, it is one of the issues, right? So you need to keep it up to date. That's one of the things that I occasionally forget about in my own software, that I do a new release and then think, oh dear, I forgot to actually update the authors or the version there. But there are tools that help you with this.
Keeping it up to date is one aspect. The other thing is to actually embed it into publications itself. So what is it we're actually going to do with this citation file format once it's being created and sits in your repository? You mentioned Zenodo, which is a publishing platform.
Yeah.
Are there other ways where the CFF file can be used when you want to publish something to, say, a scientific journal other than Zenodo?
So what you typically see is that as soon as sort of the relevant metadata ends up in a publishing platform like Zenodo, for example, or the Research Software Directory, which also uses this information, it also gets distributed over different services in the whole open science ecosystem. So if it is in Zenodo, it will also be in DataCite, for example. If it's in DataCite, it will also end up in the Research Software Directory. And if it's in the Research Software Directory, it will also end up in a service like OpenAIR, which is the European platform that collects all of the open science information. I see Citation CFF as sort of a first step. So you can provide the relevant information there. And once the information is there and ends up in one of these services, it automatically gets transferred into all the other ones and becomes part of the whole open science ecosystem, essentially.
So what is the role of the eScience Center in the Netherlands then in the development of CFF?
Well, so CFF was initially coming out of this workshop, which I mentioned earlier, and it's very much been Stefan Druskat from DLR, who is, well, the person sort of pushing CFF and taking much of the initiative behind it. A number of years ago, he was joined by Julian Spaaks, who's actually one of our research software engineers at the Netherlands eScience Center. Together, they have been the driving force behind CFF in the last couple of years, where Stefan was doing much of the community work around CFF, and Jurian was also doing this, but also a lot of the development. So in that sense, we have partly funded the development and the push behind CFF in the last couple of years. We've also created several tools around CFF. So we have, for example, the CFF init, which was mentioned earlier, but also CFF convert, which allows you to sort of validate the CFF file and convert it into various other formats. And we use CFF itself in practically all of the software that we actually develop at the eScience Center, because it's part of our best practice to include those files in our repositories. So it has been very much a joint effort between DLR and the eScience Center to push this format.
And as per usual, you will find the necessary links regarding CFF in the episode notes. And now it's time for our quiz. And the two questions for this episode are: there are different tools available to help you with the citation file format. CFF init is perhaps the most widely used. It helps you create a new citation file. But what other tools are available? Name one and explain what it does. And the second question: what are the key differences between citing software and citing articles? Have a think, and if you like to send in your answers, email me on codeforthought@proton.me. You'll find the email address in the episode notes. But now also for the answers to the two questions you've been waiting for so long from the last bite-sized episode on user experience. And the questions were: what's the difference between user interface design and user experience design? And why is it important to fully consider the consequences of your user experience design? Well, for question number one, The difference between user interface and user experience design is that user interface design focuses on looks and style of software and web applications. In user experience design, you consider the entire product and how humans interact with a device or application. In that respect, user interface design can be regarded as a subset of what makes a user experience. And as for question number two, this really boils down to the importance of understanding your users. Who are they? Why should they use your application? What problem does it solve for them? Remember that designing a user experience in a software, or any product for that matter, is designing for others. And with that, until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Code for Thought Bite-Sized. The content and the interactive bite-sized RSE sessions are created and run by Jeremy Cohen from Imperial College London and Steve Kraut from Southampton University. The podcast episodes are produced by Peter Schmidt. Finally, we'd like to thank Universe HPC for their continuous support. Oh, time's up. See you next time. But before I forget, this podcast is covered by the Creative Commons license. See ya.